Blog Talk Radio.
Bright blessings, wonderful listeners, and welcome to Lady Bridget's Ask a Witch, the show where you can call in with your most pressing questions and hopefully get some answers. We'll talk about household and magical tips, share crafty hints and how-to, and discuss everything in between, from the curious students to the novice, from beginners to high priestess and priests, from coven leaders to event planners, from speakers to the maids, the mothers, and the crones. This show is for you. I'll do my best to answer your questions or try to find the answers if possible. We have a whole community here to work with, so grab a seat. Join us for a spell or two, and remember, there are no stupid questions, just unasked ones.
And welcome to Ask a Witch, brought to you by Pagans Tonight, where pagans unite. And Lady Bridget, are you with me?
I most certainly am. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am good. So I am Lady Bridget Eldar, your hostess with the mostest. And here with me is my wonderful co-host, the co-hostess with the mostest, Kazan Clark. We also call her Mama Bear. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Just wish it would stop raining here just a little bit.
Oh, my stars, so do I. It's just not being good on the old bones, but that's what happens when you get to be old witches like us. So, you know,
okay,
we
were better off
up,
than Australia. Remember, they got spiders raining down.
Sorry, I was just going to say, don't even go there. That is really wrong to torture your co-host here with stuff like that. Just before we're going, you know, I mean, we were going to be on the air tonight, and I haven't been able to get that image out of my head. And if I have nightmares, it's going to be all your fault. I'll call you up tomorrow, and I'll say, I couldn't sleep. It was all your fault. And I'll bet you won't even feel bad, because I know if it was me, I wouldn't either. But that's okay.
Can you imagine, tiny baby spiders falling down on you and just crawling all over you, just getting covered with them?
Because, Dad, I'm not going to sleep tonight. You're so wrong. I will get you, my pretty. But Australia, as much as I love our listeners from down under, and I do love watching the documentaries about Australia, the country, and I mean, it's a beautiful place, and it's a place that I would like to go to. But then I started seeing this stuff on Facebook where they show spiders, like the biggest spiders you could ever find live in Australia. So it's like, I don't think so. And then you show me this little meme poster, whatever the heck you call it, with all these spiders raining and web everywhere. No, see, there's not enough to kill them. There's not enough poison to kill that many spiders.
So you're saying you wouldn't have one for familiar, right?
Oh, hey, no. So for those of you who do like those things, more power to you. You know, I find it interesting sometimes when we get into that conversation that most of the time people that don't care for spiders don't mind snakes, and people who don't care for snakes don't mind spiders. It's just the opposite. So, you know, I can remember calling a friend of mine at 2:00 in the morning to come kill spiders for me because it's like I'm not going anywhere and I'm here alone or the husband's asleep and oh yeah. So anyway, grab yourselves a snack and grab something to drink and maybe grab your familiar and join us as we talk about what a familiar is. We're going to talk about astral familiars with suggestions on making a familiar, and we even have a little bit on some folklore and superstitions and proverbs and So we have a great show planned for you tonight. We're glad that you were able to join us live, for those of you who are here with us. And we see some of you in our chat room. Welcome to our little group here. And we hope that for those of you who didn't get to join us live, you'll be listening in on the podcast here, because as soon as our show is over, it goes into the archives. So if there's something about our show that you got to listen to live and you missed a part of it, or there was something you wanted to go over again, you can always go into the archives and listen to what we have. Also, you want to go into our Facebook page, Lady Bridget's Ask a Witch, and check out what we have in our files section. We have all sorts of handouts that Mama Bear and I have come up with for y'all. So we hope you'll enjoy being with us tonight as much as we enjoy having you here. So I think we're going to have a little bit of fun, don't you?
Oh, yeah. But for our listeners tonight, we're going to be talking about familiars, or making one. Now, if you have a question or comment or something you'd like to share on this topic, you can call us at 347-308-8222 and press 1 at the prompt so I'll know you want to talk to us. Okay, let's start off with basic definition. What is a familiar?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm so glad that you asked that question. You know, we, being witches that we are, we all have definitions for that. But if you go with Webster's in the dictionary, that's kind of what I wanted to see, was how they would label it. And in Webster's, it's one who is often seen and well known. It's an intimate associate, a companion, a spirit often embodied in an animal and held to attend and serve or guard a person, to be acquainted with something. I think we take it a little bit further than that, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. The way they're talking about it, it's sort of like on the vampire, his human. I don't know if you're familiar with the terminology, but the human being that protects the vampire is called his familiar. And we take it up to a whole nother level, a whole nother level. But we're going to start out with some of the history of the familiar. During the days of the European witch hunts, familiars were said to be given to witches by the devil. And this was according to Rosemary Guiley's Encyclopedia of Witches and Witchcraft. But they were, in essence, small demons which could be sent out to do a witch's bidding. Although cats, especially black ones, were the favored vessel for such a demon to inhabit, dogs, toads, and other small animals were sometimes used. Anybody that watches Salem, the TV show Salem, you'll see that the witch in there, she has a frog, and she feeds the frog. Mm-hmm. She lets the frog, you know, suck from her her witch's tit or whatever on her body, and then she shoves it back into her husband's mouth and keeps him from talking. Okay, I'm not touching it.
Yeah,
we all know what
that
we'd like to do.
Yeah, no, I like that one, though. I like that little bit where she was doing that with him. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was, you know, good way to keep him in, you know, to keep him bewitched, as it was. It is a little bit exaggerated, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a story. It's meant to be a story. That's all it is. I know people who get so bent out of shape over that. That it's ridiculous. It's like, don't, you know, just chill. It's just a story. But they're getting the information that witches do some of that stuff we do, and that we do have familiars, and it could be a frog. It, you know, I said that right there. They dispelled that misconception that a familiar can only be a black cat. And
right,
it shows that it's a frog, so chill out. I mean, oh, my God, it's like Sons of Anarchy. For those of you who watch that or know what it was, the series is no longer going, which is a shame. But I liked it. But I got a lot of flack from people saying, it's not a real biker club. That isn't how real bikers are. Really? Real bikers aren't like that, huh? Well, that's interesting to know that they all fit in a category. And then if you go over to them and you say, hey, you are all the same, you know, you all fit in the same mold, then you've got all these bikers going, no, we don't. No, we don't. We're not like that. We're not. So there's no win. There's no win. But I do like the idea that they showed that we do have familiars and how it can function, even though it may not be a correct form of how we work with them. But it's, you know, it's what they did. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, in the Scandinavian countries, a familiar was associated with the land and the nature. And fairies and dwarves and other elemental beings were believed to inhabit the physical bodies of animals. So, you know, at one time when the Christian church came around, the practice went underground because any spirit other than an angel must be considered as a demon. So, you know, during the witch hunt era, a lot of the domestic animals were killed because of their association with known witches and heretics. It was horrible. You know, during the Salem trials, there is little account of the practice of animal familiars, although one man was charged with encouraging a dog to attack by way of magical means. Yeah, he probably snapped his fingers and said, bite that person for trying to be mean. But the dog, interestingly enough, was tried, convicted, and hanged, unfortunately.
Okay.
But well, I think it was a horrible thing to do to that poor dog.
Well, in shamanic practices, the animal familiar is not a physical being at all, but a thought form or a spiritual entity. It often travels astrally or serves as a magical guardian against those who might try to physically attack the shaman. And in a lot of the Native American practices, your totem animal or your guide animal has never really been a physical animal, has always been an astral creature. You know, this is why they were created, mm-hmm. in order to help the shamans. And the animals or the totems usually pass from one medicine man down to the next, and it was in a familial line. So the father had it, the grandfather had it, the great-grandfather had it, and it passed down to the son. So that lineage stayed with that particular bloodline.
They would pass their astral familiar from father to son or father
right,
to daughter?
Right, as long
really?
And they were taking in the knowledge, okay? They were trained up. See, the beauty about Native American tribal society, if you were young and you didn't know what you wanted to be or what you were supposed to be, you would have dreams or you'd go on a vision quest. And then you would go back to the shaman and the elders and tell the dream. And they would interpret it and decide, okay, this dream means that you're going to be such and such. Well, whatever that dream was interpreted to mean, that person would follow that path. You know, it wasn't like, oh, God, now what can I do with myself? I'm 18, I don't know what to do. No, you knew. You knew from the time you were 9 or 10 years old the path you were going to be walking. And you trained for it. Shamans trained for years and years under other shamans in order to get that knowledge.
Mhm. Mhm. Interesting. I didn't know they would do that. So, but you know, today there's witches and pagans have animal companions that they consider to be their familiars. You know, and the problem is that They don't, you know, today, well, the problem is people don't quite understand exactly what a familiar is. And there's too many people that think what they have is a familiar. They no longer believe that these are spirits or demons inhabiting an animal, but I think they really focus on the spirit of the animal. And instead they have this emotional and psychic bond with whatever the critter is, be it a cat or a dog, whoever or whatever, is that it's attuned to that powers of that human partner, their human person. To me, you know, the familiar is it's a living guide. It's like a spirit guide, only it's living. It's your best friend. It's an animal that you have a very strong connection with. And, you know, I'll tell you, we'll go into this in a little bit, but some people think that having their familiar in the circle strengthens it and helps their rituals just by being present at the time of the working that they're doing or the ritual that they're doing. You know, I don't really go in for that, and neither does Mama Bear.
No, I don't. I don't distraction.
I was just going to say, it's too much distraction. Yeah, you know, you don't like doing that, you know, any more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So
another thing, a wild animal probably won't be a familiar because you're not as familiar with their energies. You wouldn't sit and pet or hug a wild animal the same as you would a tame one. Now, I had a pet tiger and a pet mountain lion, and they were in cages. And no, I didn't sit and hug them.
Okay.
I was scared to death of them. My husband would pet them. No, I wouldn't. No, they're beautiful creatures. And eventually we gave them to Turpentine Creek, the big cat reserve. And, you know, it's their nature, and you can't take that out of them. You know, I was always afraid that when you got a little house cat and you're loving on it and it's had enough and it turns around and bites at you, that's one thing. But when you get a big old couple of hundred-pound cat decide it's had enough and bite you, that's not going to feel good.
Exactly.
So I never allowed myself to get that close. But that's one of the reasons why we believe that you really can't make a wild animal a familiar, because there's always that boundary of how far can you trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And you might feel at ease around that animal, and they might be at ease around you, but that doesn't mean that it just means that you might be an empath and you're able to sense what that animal is feeling. Maybe you are. You know, but they're still wild.
Absolutely. And that's one thing you got to remember, is that it is a wild critter. I have pets. I shouldn't say this, but I've been in a place in Florida where I was on this pier and there was a pelican that had gotten on it. And I was walking by and I see this pelican just sitting there kind of sunning himself, minding his own business. And I walked up to it very slowly, very quietly, and softly started talking to it. Slowly I knelt down beside it while my sister's going behind me crazy, just, oh, my God,
uh-huh.
It's going to bite you, you know. But it let me kneel beside it, and it let me pet the pet its back and its wing and the feathers and feel it, and it let me pet it while I was talking to it. And then at one point it opened its beak up so I could see inside the beak, which is enormous and huge, and I was just awestruck. But, you know, then you get overcome by the breath because it's really not the greatest.
Yeah.
Pelicans don't, they don't brush. They don't brush your teeth, but they don't have any teeth. But anyway, you know, it just, I considered myself to be very blessed and very fortunate. And I thanked it for letting me get that close and having that moment, and slowly got up and went to back away, and it never moved until this little boy decided he was going to come. He must have been about a 12-year-old kid and decided
uh-oh.
He wanted to go get near it. And that pelican, he took one look at that kid. It was like, I ain't happening. And that thing just jumped up and flew off. It took off. You know,
right.
That was it. Yeah, it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, how do you know if you have a pet? How do you know if your pet is your familiar?
Oh, okay. I'm going to tell a story here, a true story. 4 years ago, a lady that worked at the high school brought me two tiny, they were day-old kittens in a box. The mama had abandoned them, and she asked me if I would take them. Well, I brought them in. I bottle-fed them. I loved them both equally. I spent as much time with one as I did the other. I nurtured and cared for both of them equally. The fattest one, his name was Morgane, and the smaller one, his name was Merlin. Well, Morgane eventually decided he was giving up the bottle. Merlin, on the other hand, would not give up the bottle. He is 4 years old, and he is still sucking the bottle. Okay? Merlin is in the same room with me 99% of the time. At night, he has to sleep hugged up to my leg. He wraps his arm around my leg. The cat knows instinctively if I don't feel well. He knows instinctively if I'm upset. It's like, and his brother was raised with me, so it wasn't like, you know, I treated one different than the other. This cat just psychically linked to me, and he's a Klingon is what he is. If I'm at my desk, he's at the desk, and he's holding onto the hand while I'm trying to run the mouse. But also the one that I watch. If he's acting like he's hearing something, you know, the ears start moving around, or he starts to arch his back, I pay attention. Because his brother, the fat cat that he is, he just lays around and does nothing, while Merlin is very alert and very protective of me. So there is a difference. You just feel that psychic connection. It's not empathy. It's something stronger. If he thinks that somebody is giving me a problem, he is in the room with me. And my friend Renee, that always listens to the show, she can tell you he's spoiled rotten. But he is definitely my familiar. And as far as me sending him off to do magical things, I don't think so. He is the cat, though, or the film familiar to me, that is my psychic guardian, I'll put it that way. It's like he senses everything around him, and if there's a psychic threat, he's aware of it.
Yes. Yeah, they sense that. They sense that as well. And I remember my first familiar. Do you remember your first familiar?
Oh, yes.
I don't think that's something you ever forget. Oh, yeah, I don't think you ever forget that. Little black ball of fur. So your first one was what, a kitty?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yep. You're a kitty person.
Oh, yeah, I always have been.
And, you know, it's surprising that, you know, for me, my first one was a cat, and because I'm not much of a cat person. But my mother wouldn't let me get a dog, so I got this cat. And over time, and I knew nothing about having a familiar. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how to make one. I knew nothing about it. But I knew that this cat was really in tune with me. And it knew when I wasn't feeling well, you know, just like you. It would sleep with me, and he would sleep curled up beside me. But if I was sick, he would lay closer up.
Mm-hmm.
And especially wherever I was sick, wherever I was feeling, you know, if it was a stomach problem or if it was a head problem, he would lay near that area. And he'd just get up against me, and he'd lay up against me, and he would purr like crazy. And that was like his way of giving me a healing. I knew he was giving me healing energies. And, of course, I would love on him. But he was my first. And then the one that I had after that, years later, I got a Doberman. And she became my familiar. So years and years had gone by. Many years and many dogs came in and out through that time. Many dogs, and then came this dog that a friend of mine had given me, and she was beautiful. She was a Great Dane. She was just what I wanted. She was a blue Great Dane, and had a beautiful personality. She was a good dog. She really was, and she was my familiar. I hadn't had one in a long time, and after the Doberman passed, I didn't think I would ever have another one, but. You know, then I got her, and sure enough, she was. And we had a really, really special bond. And I think that in all the years of having and owning and being owned by, I should say, all these dogs, she had the biggest part of my heart. That one just had a hold on me more than any other dog ever has and more than my other familiar has. So aside from your first little ball of fur, how many familiars have you had?
Well, I can only count three in my whole 60-some years of life that I would consider familiars, because you go for long periods of time without one. And I don't know if it's because you're not ready for them or you know, just what's... I think when we lose our familiar, we grieve for a whole lot longer. And this may sound bad, but it's just the way it is. We grieve longer for our familiar than we do for our pets. You know, we'll have other pets, but that bond just isn't able to form. And I don't know if it's because we're not ready for one, or if, you know, there just isn't one available for us at the time. But I think we go a lot longer without familiars when we lose one than we do just a regular pet.
I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, I know people who will tell me, oh, I've got 25 cats and they're all my familiars. Or one lady had 5 cats and they were all her familiars. She was sure of it. And I didn't have the heart to tell her, no, they're not. You'll be lucky if even one of those cats is your familiar.
Right.
What about,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just, you may think that you understand what the cat is thinking or feeling or whatever, but that is related more to being empathic than it is to being a familiar. You know, an empath is a person that can psychically tune in to the emotional experience of another person or an animal. Oh, God. Okay, something just
what
hit
happened?
My... Oh, it scared the daylights out of me. It must be my house ghost. It hit my door on my armoire. And I don't know if you heard that thud, but oh, my God,
uh-huh.
It scared the daylights out of me. And I'm home alone, and it's not my critters. The cat and the dog, one cat's outside. The other cat is in my room with my boy, Thor. And my girl, Magic, is off on a ride with her daddy. So I'm here alone. So I'm just sitting here, and that thump went off when I was talking about being empathic and the familiars. So, okay, whoever was here, hello, how are you? But, you know, in the paranormal and in some works of fiction and fantasy, a really highly developed sense of empathy is a psychic ability that you have to sense emotion of others. And you know, you may have that. You may be empathic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that critter is your familiar. Can you have a familiar other than a cat or a dog?
Yeah, I think so.
I
really
do.
It depends on the relationship that you have with the animal. But it has to be a close relationship.
Yes, it does. A very close. I had a friend that had a snake that was her familiar. It was a red-tailed bald python, I think is how you call them.
Mm-hmm.
But that was her familiar. And we would go off on motorcycle runs where we're riding for charities, whatever. You know, we used to do a lot of charity riding. But she would, you know, there's one guy in the bunch, he had this little dog, and he would take him, and the dog would ride on the tank of the bike, and she would ride, and she'd have her snake, and she kept it in the Seagram 7 bag, but... when he wanted out in the air, she'd wrap it around her neck. That snake loved to ride around her neck. It's like you'd get next to her, you'd see her, and you'd see that snake around her neck, and you'd see him looking at you, and you would swear that snake had a smile on its face.
Yeah.
It just seemed like he was enjoying that ride so much. So, you know, I believe you can have other familiars. I know there's people that have reptiles as a familiar, so... Yeah, there is no limitation. I mean, good grief, and the witches in Salem have frogs or toads, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, how do you know? So the question, how do you know the difference between a familiar or if you're just being empathic? How would you know the difference?
Like I say, it's the degree of the depth of the relationship, you know. It's like my fat cat, Morgaine, he'll come up, he'll want lovin's, and you can love on him. And he's had enough. He goes and he lays down, and he basically ignores you until he needs his food bowl filled or something. Whereas Merlin, who is my familiar, is always right there with me. So there's the difference. I mean, it's like he feels it's his place to be there.
My girl Gwen, everywhere I went, she went. Everywhere. And she was always by my side through thick and through thin. So she was a good one. But some people think that they have familiars in the astral level. Have you ever, I know I've heard of that, and I'm sure you have. It's kind of redundant to ask if you've ever heard of that. I know you have. So let's tell our listeners what an astral familiar might be. You want to go ahead?
Yeah. This is a brief article by Stephen Bancars. In the pagan and native traditions, a spirit animal is an animal that represents the characteristics and skills that you're supposed to have and learn. Okay, but now here I'm going to add something of my own. I think an astral spirit animal could very well have been like your Gwen. The animal has passed on, but is still on the astral plane around you.
Yes. Oh, definitely, definitely, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But in any event, when you have a spirit animal, like Native Americans, you know, they call on the powers of that spirit animal. Or you ask the wolf, if you're looking for a teacher, you ask the wolf or the owl to help you find your teacher. These spirit animals can provide guidance on a lot of things, an aspect of yourself that's already strongly developed or it needs to be explored more, a situation or environment in your everyday life that has a strong emotional impact, or a life direction that you could consider and or reflect on. And many people take online quizzes to see which animals that they can relate to. Now, I like to use the medicine cards by, I forgot her name now. It left me. But anyway, you pick, for one time in your life, you pick 9 cards, and these will be your totem animals or your spirit animals. And from that point, you know these are the guides that you've got to accompany you through your life path.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you
Absolutely.
Want us to tell us about about the 5 signs that your pet is in your spirit, is your spirit animal?
Well, actually, I have, I just have like 3 here.
Okay.
What we did is we have a website that we've given you like a few websites to go look at, and they will tell you what we have.
Mm-hmm.
They'll, you know, you can go into these websites and find a little bit more, but... Three of the items is that it's a spirit animal or a familiar, if it is your spirit animal. One of the signs is like you feel like they're your better half. You know, they display character and personality traits that you wish you had. Forgiveness, unconditional love, acceptance, non-judgment. These are behaviors that they can't avoid. They're literally your better half, and you often look up to them for that wisdom and the guidance. So it's not just an ordinary pet, as he says. It's a little bit more, like we were saying earlier. It's a little bit more, knowing when you need extra attention, knowing when you're not feeling well. They inspire and they humble you. You know, our critters have ways of showing us life lessons that, you know, kind of humble us a little bit. They remind you about love and about unconditional love and forgiveness and you know, moving on and forgetting what goes on. So that's part of it there too. They help to heal you emotionally and spiritually and in other ways. They're in a way it's like a therapist. I know a friend that has a dog. It's a little Yorkie that he has had registered as a service dog because it's emotionally calming for him. It's quieting for him. It's therapeutic, and it keeps him, oh, my God, so much happier than what he used to be. You know, there's such a difference when he got this Yorkie, such a difference in his personality. He's happier. He's more content with himself. He just, many, many improvements for him that are positive by having this little familiar, this little spirit dog. So according to this article that was published in Scientific American, cats purr both during inhalation and exhalation with a consistent pattern and a frequency between 25 and 150 hertz. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Did you?
Uh-huh. Did you also know that the purr actually originates in the cat's bloodstream, in the blood vessels?
No.
Uh-huh. Does not come from the throat, although that's where you'll feel it the hardest. It actually comes from their bloodstream,
right,
in the blood vessels.
That's interesting. So, you know, like the article is saying, too, that in helping you, you know, to heal, when you feel like you're being healed emotionally and spiritually by your pet, you really are. And that's what we were saying earlier, like I said with, you know, with the cat that I had and with your little baby, with little Merlin there and how he loves on you. Spirit animals and familiars are a little bit different than a totem animal. A totem animal is an animal that you feel a close connection. You want to talk about totems? You know pretty much a lot
okay.
about them.
Like I said before, you can do your totem animal, get your totem animals and your cards, but I obtained different totems in different ways. One of them was I had a dream, and in this dream, my cat was very sick from fleas, and I had to get rid of the fleas in order to bring my cat home. So the vet had called me. I was on the phone with the vet, and he said, if you bring that cat home and there's fleas in the house, the cat's going to die. Well, all of a sudden, I looked into the kitchen, and this humongous flea, the size of a dog, was standing by my sink. And dropping down from the ceiling was this huge spider that just grabbed up this flea, wrapped it up, and it was gone. All right, I felt then and there that I had gotten spider medicine. I had gotten spider protection. On another incident, I had been to, and you remember this, the Lincoln Park Zoo. You know, they always had that little area for everybody to pet all the animals and what have you. They had an old raven there by the name of Raven Joe. And I walked up to him, and I was talking to him, and all of a sudden, he bends down and he picks up a stick out of his cage, and he's trying to hand me the stick, but he's going widthwise rather than lengthwise, and he couldn't get the stick to go through. So he dropped it onto the floor of the cage and pushed it out from under it with his beak, and I got it. And I knew then that now I have raven medicine. So you get your totem animals in really different ways. But I knew I had raven and I knew I had spider because they were sent to me during this time of my life. And the other, and you do get, throughout your lifetime, you do get totem animals when you need them. But, I mean, if you're not looking for it, you probably won't see it. Some people might have just said, oh, well, that was real cute. Look, that raven tried to give you a stick. You know, I understood the depth of that. Mm-hmm. And if you are seeking totem animals, if you are seeking to be made aware of them, all you have to do is meditate on it and be open to it, and you'll find these animals trying to communicate with you, trying to share their powers with you
and teach you lessons as well.
There's
a website that we have included for you tonight that lists different totem animals. Of course, it's not inclusive. It does cover quite a bit, but there's a couple of websites that we have for you that will tell you about different animals and what they represent or what their lesson is that they have to teach you, and you'll find it pretty interesting. I know a lady, she's not pagan, but she is very much aware of her surroundings. She isn't pagan, she isn't Native American, but she's very spiritual oriented, and she, we were talking about, there's a hawk that's on this side of town, and it's such an unusual thing that it made the news. So every now and then you see this hawk. So when I went in to go see her one day, I said, "Have you heard the hawk's over on this side of town again?" And she said, "Yeah, I saw it. I was coming up this road, and I saw him flying up in there." And she said, "Oh, they're beautiful." And she said, "You know, that's my totem spirit, my totem animal." And I went, "Wow, really? You know what a totem animal is?" And she said, "Oh, yeah. You know, it's the spirit that is there to teach you and guide you and be there for you." And I went, "Wow, gee, you know, being spiritualist is very cool. And I'm really impressed that you knew what it was. And I think that's fabulous." So we talked about that for a little bit, but it was kind of fun. So it's nice to be awakened, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Be awakened to your totem.
And you miss so much if you're, you know, life just seems like it just goes by in a big blur unless you take the time to focus your attention on all the messages that spirit is trying to send you.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true.
And, you know, almost everyone has a variety of pets in their lifetime. But every once in a while, a special kind of pet comes along that sticks out from the rest. Now, I've seen this in cases where, you know, I don't want an animal. I really don't want this. I don't want that. But all of a sudden, this stray kitten or this stray puppy just connects with this person that said they don't want animals. And they'll snatch this animal up and take it home. It's almost like, okay, if you won't come find me, I'm going to go find you. You know,
right.
In those instances, that animal was seeking you before you ever found it.
And that, you know, and that's so true. And if you have your eyes open and you're consciously aware of looking for it, it's almost as if you connect instantly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm like you. In my lifetime, I've had three, and I seriously doubt I'll ever have another one. But as my mother would say, you never say never. So it's always a possibility. I mean, after I lost my Doberman, after I lost Lady, it just didn't seem like I was ever going to have another one. You know, and I'd had other dogs. Like I said, I had other dogs. I had a friend with Great Danes, and I love Great Danes. I've always loved Great Danes. So, it was sad when they passed, but, oh, my gosh, it was nothing like when I lost my Dobie, when I lost my Familiar. I was so out of it and so disoriented, so just beside myself to losing that dog that I forgot about our wedding anniversary. My husband, I'd go water the garden. She wasn't there to water with me. And so I started letting that go, and he couldn't stand to see my garden dry up, so he'd go out and he'd water it. You know, he was, bless his heart, he's such a sweet guy. He couldn't take it anymore. So he one day he said he was going out for a ride, and I said, okay, fine. Well, what he did is he rode up to the animal shelter and went to see if he could find me another dog. So, you know, that's what he did. He found me another dog. He got another dog for me. And, you know, it was a sweet gesture. I didn't have the heart to tell him it wasn't going to be a Familiar. There wasn't that connection. But,
no.
You know, it was nice. You know, it was a good dog. And you know, it turned out to be a big blessing, because he taught us so much about love and about forgiveness, because he was a shelter dog, like I said. And when we were saying our goodbyes to my Familiar, we were watching a piece on the news about these dogs that had been kept in small cages and very, very neglected, and how horrible these dogs, and they've taken some horses as well. And I said something about it at the time, that I just somehow I had a feeling I was going to end up with one of those dogs, and that's what we ended up getting. So it was a blessing.
Yeah, I want to bring up another point here, too. sometimes the animal that you have, you cannot recognize that they are your familiar right away. You know, this relationship mm-hmm. takes a while to develop. So if you're you go to the shelter and you grab up a cat and you say, okay, I want this cat for my familiar because you see something in it that you like. You know, it may take that cat a while to adjust to you, or you may finally figure out, well, I like the cat because of the way he looks, but I'm not bonding like I should be. And that's okay. You know, love that cat. That cat will love you in return. It's just not going to be the depth of a familial relationship. And these are things you really can't force. You can do what you can to encourage it, but it either is going to be or it isn't going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So you want to go over some cat facts?
Oh, yes. We cut this list real short, okay? There's a whole bunch more.
There is a website, so if you want to go look at more of it, you can.
Yeah, that's in our list, isn't it? Our website list?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Because I'm telling you, it's folklore, superstitions, and proverbs on cats. And some of it was really interesting. But one of the first facts we have for you is King Asarkhan of the 22nd dynasty placed a white cat in the center of a magnificent temple and ritually endowed it with supreme power. Okay, I might be dumb here, but just what the heck was ritually endowing it with supreme power? What was he giving the cat?
He was giving the cat his supreme power.
Okay,
I don't know.
He was saying, okay, you're the boss, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, cool.
Obviously, this was one of those people that was probably not right. Really not right. Like, yeah.
Yeah, really.
So
I'm going to go ask the cat. If the cat says so, we'll go to war.
Really, this little tidbit was something that it was amazing and yet sad. During excavations in the ruins of Tel Basta, it was formerly Budapest.
It was formerly Bubastis.
It was a graveyard with 300,000. Mummified holy cats that had been discovered. And though many were sent to England and sold as fertilizer, a few were sent to museums.
Hmm.
Yeah. Wasn't that
fertilized?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Oh, goodness. Well, the Muhammad cut off the sleeve of his robe rather than disturb his cat from resting on. I'm sorry, I can identify with this. I got my cat in my lap. I don't want to get up because he's sleeping so good.
You know, I understand that. That's like when I have my cat laying there, little Bear. I've got this little striped kitty cat, and he's just recently turned 3 years old, and he's a real sweetheart. And he gets in my lap like that, but if I want to get up, it's going to be pick him up, or he'll sit on my seat. And when I go to get on my computer, if he's sitting on my seat, I use both hands to scoop him up and just keep him in his position. And then I sit down and I lay him in my lap, and he will stay like that. He won't even, he doesn't even give me a dirty look and leave. Now, if I do that to his mother, Mocha, if I do that to her, she gives you this dirty look like, how dare you move me? She thinks she's a queen. But a Thai legend tells of cats that guarded a temple from Burmese invaders. They saved the temple treasure, which was a golden goblet belonging to the Buddha, by hooking their tails around it and not letting go. This accounts for the kink at the end of the tail of almost all Thai cats. Another story is that when a certain princess went to bathe and gave her rings to a cat to guard, it kinked its tail so that the rings wouldn't fall off.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, I thought so.
Oh, did you know that bobtail cats, you know, that are born without a tail, that's a form of spina bifida?
Really?
Yes.
And is that just the bobtail cats or?
No, you can have normal domestic cats where, you know, like human beings, like I have spina bifida, and it's a birth defect. You know, a cat uses its tail for a lot of things, including balance. So the kittens that are born without a tail, you'll notice that they're clumsier, they fall a lot. You know, it's because they have that birth defect. And it's not always prevalent, but it is a genetic trait that will pass down.
Yeah, because in Florida, when I went to the Keys, we went to see Hemingway's home and the area down in the Keys through there, and it was very fascinating. And he has all these cats running around that are tailless cats. It's genetic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just breed that way, and it was the only kind of a cat that he would have. So it was kind of an interesting little piece there. We have for handouts for you, Mama Bear has put together one that we called Making a Familiar Spells. It's the handout. It has a spell for Over the Moon, and it has one for a familiar blessing, a spell to welcome new furry friend into your home, and there's something in here for communicating with animals. And then I put together a little ritual for you that I've used in the past to make a familiar. And, you know, it's just something, once you know that you have that familiar, once you know that that critter is going to be your familiar, this is just a little bit of a ritual that I did years and years ago. This is really old, but I did it years ago to just seal the bond between my, the first one was my cat, so between that critter and myself. It's been revised. When I got the Doberman I was talking about, I revised it to bond with her a little bit, and it was kind of cool to do it in a sacred space. And it was special enough that, you know, they know that this was a special honor I was giving them and that they were giving me by being with me in that sacred space. So mm-hmm. when I did do rituals or whatnot, they stayed out of it. I didn't need to lock them up in their room or their cage. They just stayed away out of, they didn't get into my ritual area. Pretty nice.
Well, you know, one time I wanted to get a cat because my cat had died. And I went to the shelter because I'm one of those, I will go to a shelter and get an animal before I'll go out anywhere because they need it. But I walked in there, and it's just a huge cage, and all these cats are laying around in it. And I walked in there, and I said, okay, whoever needs to be with me, come to me. And I just stood there, and nobody moved. Absolutely nobody moved. And then this little gray Siamese cat, kitten, couldn't have been more than 6 weeks old, came running up to me, ran up my jeans and up my shirt, and posted on my shoulder. Well, okay, I took him home. Eventually, I named the cat Devil.
Oh, no.
Okay. He was not my familiar, no. He was the orneriest, meanest. And I think I got him because anybody else that got him would have probably abandoned him or killed him. I put plastic on my windows during the wintertime, okay? When Devil wanted to eat, in the morning when I'm in bed, he would hook his claws into the plastic, and I could hear it pop, you know, and it would wake me up because I'd have to tape the plastic up. You know, this cat did this every single day to wake me up. He didn't pounce me. I would hear that plastic go pop, pop, and he'd look at me to make sure I was waking up. he was a case. He really was. But I don't think he would have been tolerated by many people.
No, I don't think that that would be something I could tolerate. I'd probably, I'm pretty sure I would probably tape his paws together for him doing that until he learns not to, you know. So, no, I don't know. That just, that would be aggravating.
He could
be. Somebody told me that you could put that bubble wrap on something if you didn't want the cats to scratch or to, you know, claw at something. If you put bubble wrap up there, that they wouldn't mess with it. Someone told me
I haven't tried that.
Yeah, I did. I did try it. I had a chair.
And did it work?
No, Bear really got into popping the bubble wrap.
I would have. No, give me a thing of bubble wrap, and I'm going to be busy for 30 minutes.
Oh, for real. I mean, you know, really, too. But I have never seen or heard of a cat that liked to play with bubble wrap and go pop, pop. I've never heard of that before. I must have a quote-unquote special cat.
Real special.
You know, like a, yeah, like special ed special. Yes, indeed. We have just a few more minutes here, so I wanted to have you talk about next week. What do we have coming up?
Okay, next week we're going to be discussing healing ways. And this is going to be not an in-depth, but more like an intro to the different healing modalities that all of us are really actually gifted with if we want to develop them. And among those are Reiki, therapeutic touch, auras, cleansing auras, chakra balancing, which I do a lot of that for people. You know, these are all different healing modalities to restore the body back to balance. But we're going to be giving you an intro to each of them. And if you have experience being one of these people who either gives or gets this type of therapy, please call in. Share what you have with us.
Definitely. Yeah, we want to hear from you. Share it in our Facebook page, too, if you'd like to. So you know, this is, it'll be part of our Witches Cupboard series. And we have a lot of, we have a kind of a long list of ways of healing. And we, you know, ideas of healing that you may not even have thought of or may not even realize is a healing.
Mm-hmm. So this is what we're going to be giving you next week, and we'll have lots of handouts, I'm sure, and lots of websites in case you want to get further into it.
And learn further information. And should we tell them about our other news, or should we just...
Oh, yeah, you go ahead. We got a special guest coming.
Well, you know, or maybe I could be a little bit evasive about it, but... let's see. It's something that we like to share. Mama Bear shares these because she gets to it before I do. And by the time, it's just I'm constantly on the run, and I only have so much data. You get so many, you know, so much data on your phone, and I get that. And usually by the end of the towards the end of the month, I get those little messages that I'm about to run out of my data. I'm going doing too much, but I'm constantly on the run where Mama's not like that, you know, because Ann sits there at home a lot and has that ability to stay home and work on things and put her beautiful creations up on Etsy. You'll have to go check it out under Kazan Clark, but I didn't have that opportunity. So by the time I get to the computer and I go to check out my sites, which are always the same sites that she's on, I see that she's already posted something that I would like to share. So, you know, we do find a lot of things together. We do find some things different, you know, here and there. But for the most part, she and I are just birds of a feather. We're literally two peas in that pod. And when we were making up this list of ways of healing, it was interesting. But she likes to share these certain quote-unquote pages on our Ask a Witch website. And judging from the email that has gone back and forth, from the messaging that's gone back and forth, I think they're pretty excited because I know that we are super excited. So we're looking next month at having the authors. Should we say it? Or should we just let them? Should we tell them?
No, let's say it.
All right. We're going to have the authors of the Puka Pages on the show.
Yes,
so,
and we are so excited about that. I think these people have been around for years. They have been doing wonderful things for pagan kids, and we're going to have them on the show to talk about what they've done, how they've done it, you know, their inspirations, and I'm really, really thrilled to have them on.
Me too. I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it, so we hope that you'll be as excited about it as we are, especially those of you that have little ones. And what I like about these Puka Pages and their website as well, their Facebook pages, is that they have everything for everyone. You know, they have something for everyone, I guess is what I'm trying to say. If you have little pikes, 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old little ones running around, they have something for that age group. If you have older ones, middle, you know, 6, 7, 10, 11, 12, they have something for them as well. And they have family-oriented material. So it's a really, really good, inspiring site to check out.
And everything is a free download. It comes in as a PDF, and it's a free download. I mean, they're doing this, and they're doing it as a gift to the pagan children. And I think this is just marvelous.
It is absolutely marvelous. So with that, we are at the end of our time here, but we want you all to know how much we appreciate you, and we appreciate our listeners, and we are really glad that you're a part of our Ask a Witch program. Those of you who do send us email, we read it. We read your suggestions, and we appreciate your suggestions. So please keep those letters coming along with your ideas, and we hope that you all have a great week, and blessed be everyone.
And all of you out there, blessed be, and be good to each other. Good night.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night, Pagans Tonight.